Hey, everybody. Welcome to Hobbs and Friends of the OSR. I am your host, Jason Hobbs, and as always, I'm very excited to be back on the mics and having awesome people to talk to. My guest is a cool guy who reached out to me that I only knew by reputation before that. He's made a game and he does some awesome reviews on his vlog. His name is Ben Milton. Ben, thanks for joining me, man.
Thanks for having me.
I was really excited about it when you joined me because I kind of wanted to do interviews once in a while because it seems like a great way to spread the love on people that you know making great products. Is that kind of why you started?
Well, with my vlog?
Yeah.
Originally, it wasn't even about the OSR. Originally, it was map making. So I was doing tutorials on how to draw fantasy maps because I put one on Reddit at one point way back in the past and it kind of blew up. So I made a couple of videos and then it took off from there. And then once I kind of on the side got into the OSR, I realized, hey, I could do reviews of these. So I did a few reviews and then that slowly became more my thing.
Yeah, you seem like you've done a lot. When I look at your catalog, I'm always like, damn, that's a lot of stuff. When you started doing your fantasy maps, what drew you to that?
I've been doing that since I was a kid.
Okay.
That's just been like a thing I did with my friends. I had a bunch of friends and we were all into fantasy literature. So we were all creating this giant collaborative fantasy world. We weren't playing RPGs at all. I didn't really play an RPG campaign until about 5 years ago, but I was just into fantasy world building. And so I did that. And then I just did a lot of map making and stuff on the side. And then as I got older, I just doodled maps just as a thing I did to keep myself entertained or sane in long meetings and things like that. Yeah, that's where it mostly came from.
All right. So I normally talk about how we know each other. You're a person who actually reached out to me on Twitter, I think, saying that you had listened to the podcast, which always humbles me. So thank you for that. So you got any brief pointers you want to give me? So things that I can do better?
It's a really different show than mine. I mean, I do some interviews now and then. I think I've done like 4 interviews with a couple different OSR guys. But no, I really like your show. I was recently just looking into different podcasts because I don't listen to podcasts that much, but I have a long commute. So I'm like, I'm going to find all the good D&D podcasts. So I just like subscribe to all of them and just start listening to them. And yours one of the few really good OSR ones. So that's nice.
I felt like I've kind of carved a niche out in that because most of them seem like older guys who aren't have good audio quality. And I think that's important in a podcast because what else is there?
Yeah.
All right. That's awesome. So let's talk about our gaming. So you just started playing 5 years ago, really, you said?
Yeah. I mean, I knew what D&D was. I think I'd played one or two attempts at playing an RPG before then. Like as a teenager, I bought Decipher's RPG of Lord of the Rings. And I tried like one episode or one session of that. I had no idea what I was doing. It all fell to pieces. And then I had some friends who like tried to get me into AD&D for like, you know, again, one session, which just fell apart. And that was like as a teenager, but I was always fascinated by RPGs. I just didn't have a group.
All right.
And then about 5 years ago, I ran into Andrew Armstrong, who runs Dawnforge Cast, which is a really big D&D YouTube channel. And he was teaching at the same school I was, and I got into his home group. And then it kind of took off from there.
I think I've actually seen some of those videos from Dawnforge Cast. So that's pretty cool. It's always interesting to hear those connections that can either get created through gaming or by gaming or something like that. So what have you been playing in the last week or so?
Mostly I just run games. I've been looking for a group to join because I haven't got to play in a long time. But for the most part, I run games for 10-year-olds. So I teach fifth grade. And so I do after school clubs 3 times a week, where I run RPGs. And usually that's some form of an OSR game. I mostly run Maze Rats, which is the game that I wrote for those kids. And then I put it up and it's become fairly successful. That's a good one for kids because it's so fast and easy to learn. So that's what I usually run. Though I've run a little bit of 5th edition. I've done a little bit of Lamentations as well.
So you don't play at all?
Not recently.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. Andrew moved to Colorado. Now he's doing that, his thing full time. And I just haven't had a group for a little while. It looks like I might have one coming up soon. So I'm excited about that, but I've mostly just been DMing.
And then when you say you have one coming up, is that face to face or maybe online or?
Yeah. Like an actual in-person one. So yeah, I know a couple of people who are interested. So yeah, I'm like, I want to start playing again. I'm done with DMing for now.
That's pretty interesting. I actually heard from Maze Rats by Jarrett Crater, who has been on the show and is he likes to play with kids and does a lot of running for strangers or whatever. So I'd never seen it before, but it sounds pretty interesting. Is there anything briefly you want to say about it?
So it's designed for kids originally, but it's also good for adults who want really fast, light games. So you can make characters in like 10 minutes or maybe even 5 minutes. What a lot of people like about it is that you can randomly generate all sorts of aspects about the characters, like what their clothes look like and what their face looks like and all this stuff. So you get these random weirdos that pop out the other side. It's very deadly. And the main benefit of the game is that it comes with like 80 random tables that generate everything from like wildernesses to dungeons to cities to random spells to like everything that you might need, random monsters, random treasure. And so you can just randomly generate everything you need on the fly. So you have to do very little prep.
That sounds pretty cool. It was based off Into the Odd.
Originally, yeah. Yeah. And then it sort of diverged more into its own thing.
Okay.
But I was inspired a lot by Into the Odd.
All right. That's awesome. All right. So I was at GaryCon last week. And when I go to cons, I almost never sign up for anything on the grid. I usually end up in games. Like I got into Astonishing Swordsman and Sorcerers of Hyperborea with Tim DeShane. He ran a 4-hour session one day and then like continued it the next day, which was pretty fun. I really enjoyed that game because he played it really raw. You never quite know what you're going to get when you go to a con game. And in the past, I'd played with Chainsaw or Donovan Chaney, who's a big fan of Astonishing Swordsman. And he kind of, when he ran it, it felt like it was any other OSR game. And it didn't really use the specific rules for combat that are in Astonishing Swordsman. So Tim was using that. And I found that to be kind of a weird area. I don't know if you ever read the second printing of Astonishing Swordsman or...
No, that's one of those OSR games that I've just never read. I know a lot about it, but I really want to read it at some point.
It kind of has these two phases. When I almost never read rule books, so I'm kind of bad at that. But when I read it, I found it kind of confusing, and I wanted to talk to people about it. And when he ran it, it made a lot of sense. So it kind of reminded me of Shadow of the Demon Lord, actually, with the two different phases of the initial combat. Like if you move and attack, you're in phase two. If you just attack, you're in phase one. That's kind of how it just rolled out. Right. Like when I read it in print, I was like, I don't even get what this means. So that was really fun. We had a really good time with that. I mean, I got to start the beginning of the session started with starting something on fire, and the end of the last session ended with starting something on fire. So I felt like, you know, we had come full circle, and it was a good ending.
That sounds great. Yeah.
All right. So then I played in a Labyrinth Lord game with the author of Barrow Maze, Greg Gillespie.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I had never met him before, and Ian was hanging out with Tim and gave him a ticket, and I was like, I don't know if I'm really going to play anything today. And then I was like, it's kind of stupid maybe to miss an opportunity to play with, because he was actually running Caverns of Arachia. And so that was really fun. I had a good time with that. He did it interesting, too. He did the whole, hey, you're trapped in a dungeon. We were separated, and so the group tried to find each other, didn't. You don't have anything, and we're playing Labyrinth Lord. Kind of he has a house rule Labyrinth Lord that he gave us, but after that game, one of his buddies, Art Braun, who is a miniatures skullduggery, I think he's a miniature guy who sells miniatures. He was talking about, you know, hey, we don't have to end now if you guys don't want to, but a bunch of people had games or whatever. And I was like, well, if you don't have anything to do, I'll gather up some people and you can run a game for us. And Greg was like, yeah, I'll do it. And so we got like a private game from Greg Gillespie of Barrow Maze at an open gaming table. And we played for like 5 hours. So it was pretty fun, man.
That's awesome. Yeah.
It was interesting to see him actually run it because I play with my buddy Paul Wolf, who runs the game. And I'm always curious to see what the author intends compared to how we use it. It doesn't matter how we use it, obviously, but it's interesting to compare the two. And it was a really good time. I also did something crazy on Saturday night at the con. Julian from Spellburn and I got together with a mic, and we wanted to actually interview people and then somehow make it into a episode of our podcast and theirs, or share it with everyone. And it was so noisy. The closest place was this foyer in the men's bathroom nearby the party we were having, kind of. And so we interviewed all sorts of people in the bathroom. So we haven't decided if it's going to be called Toilet Talk or the Bathroom Interviews.
I was really bummed out that I couldn't make it to GaryCon.
You were going to?
Well, I was thinking about it. I can't really go to any cons that aren't in Phoenix where I live, just because I'm a teacher and I can't just like take 5 days off of school.
You have to go to North Texas because there is no school in June.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'll definitely think about that.
If you want to go to an OSR con, you want to go to North Texas because there's about 300 people there.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a really good one. I've been there. So, all right. So we're going to do everything about you. You look like you're pretty young, so I don't know if you've ever heard of Ugly Kid Joe.
I don't think so.
Okay. So they have a song called Everything About You. But if you listen to the podcast, you know it's a segment where we try and share something with the listeners that they don't know about us. So do you want to go first? You want me to?
Oh, yeah. Something that people don't know about me. I think everyone knows that I'm a teacher and I run games for kids. I'm super into board games. Maybe people don't know that about me. I have a big collection of board games here. I don't have as big a collection as some people because I cycle them out, but I have a group that I've been playing board games with for a long time. And that's mostly been my passion for most of my career being in gaming before I got into RPGs. I did a lot of board game design and stuff like that. So that was really my first love in terms of getting into gaming.
So what did you think about the whole hubbub from Swedish Games? Did you see that? I mean, wasn't that recently on Twitter or Google Plus where they were talking about, I wasn't prepared for this, obviously, where they were talking about the Western games are not any good or American based games compared to the European games. Does that sound familiar to you at all or no?
I don't know if I've heard of that specific controversy, but I think, Isn't that a controversy that's been going on for decades?
I'm sure it is. And it probably always will.
Yeah,
right?
It's like Ameritrash versus Euro games. Yeah. I like my Ameritrash games.
All right.
Yeah. Space Hulk's one of my favorite games, and that's about as trashy as it gets.
Really? I don't even know that much about board games. So
Space Hulk is so good. It's like a dungeon crawl, but in space with space marines. It's like the movie Aliens, where like they're closing in and it's great. I love it.
There's an actual RPG of that called Hulks and Horrors. Have you heard of that?
Sounds sort of familiar.
Yeah, it's like a white box type game or something. All right. So I'm going to talk about my Anchor channel. They redid Anchor and I haven't looked into it, but I did about, 5 minute, maybe more than that. And then I turn them into a podcast. So I find it interesting to talk about mental health sometimes. And I really didn't want to do it on this podcast because I'm always talking to strangers or whatever, where on Random Street, I can just talk into my phone. So if you ever want to hear anyone talk about mental health and their own struggles with it or their own solutions to getting better, check out Random Screed. We both talked about maybe doing reviews of OSR games together or whatever, or are you just doing them occasionally then as snippets and I could throw them in the show? But I really thought the first time that we got together, I should just interview like I normally do with people talking. So I guess I'll ask you, our main topic here is talking about your vlog reviews, because that's mostly what you're doing now, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the favorite products that you've reviewed and why would you say so? You want to talk about that briefly, or maybe your thought process of creating that, or just anything you want to say about it, really?
Sure. It's really hard to pick the top products. There's been so much really good stuff that's come out recently. I mean, one of the biggest recent ones was Hot Springs Island, right? The Dark of Hot Springs Island and A Field Guide. But also some of my other favorite ones would be like Maze of Blue Medusa and Veins of the Earth. I guess those would be all in my top five or so, I think.
Okay. So it seemed like you kind of edge closer to the Lamentations group of the OSR then. Would you say that? Or
I suppose so. As opposed to like the Labyrinth Lord end of the spectrum, or?
Well, I guess so, because obviously those would be more just those are the retro clones where Lamentations, some people may say that it's not even necessarily OSR because of how different the aesthetic is.
Really? You think people, I don't think I've met anyone who would say that.
I've said it before, so.
I suppose I do hew closer to the people who are pushing the OSR out of the retro clone space.
I personally do not see a problem with that.
Yeah.
It all depends on what is the definition of OSR. Is it having to do particular rules, or is it an aesthetic, or whatever is it? So you did Operation Unfathomable too, right?
I backed that. I have not read it yet.
Oh, I was thinking that I had seen that you had. Maybe I just asked. I'd be curious to see, because that is closer to the Labyrinth Lord aspect, because the Hydra Cooperative are more they're built for Labyrinth Lord, all of those.
That's true.
Have you done any of them? I didn't look.
In terms of Hydra Cooperative like stuff?
Yeah.
I've looked at, let me think.
Like Chris Kutelik's stuff?
Yeah. I did Slumbering Earth Sign Dunes.
Right.
And I did a review of Fever Dreaming Marlinko. And I still need to do a review of Misty Isles of the Eld. That's coming up at some point.
Yeah. So it's interesting to say that that is closer to Labyrinth Lord, because it's definitely sci-fi gonzo stuff. Mm-hmm. Really. I mean, it's not more, it's not any less gonzo than Lamentation stuff. Maybe a less gory or erotic or heavier in that guar section of the space, I guess.
Sure.
What got you into doing reviews? You said earlier that you kind of stumbled into it. What happened there? I guess
I was playing Pathfinder. That was the original campaign I was in with Andrew. And then I got a little frustrated with that. It's just too heavy for my tastes. So I started doing a lot of research and exploring different types of RPGs, and that led me into story games. So for a while, I was buying lots of story games. I was playing games like Fiasco and some Powered by the Apocalypse games. And then I slowly came to the realization that these games were not for me, that I just didn't really have a lot of fun with them. They weren't what I was looking for. And then it was mostly through the OSR blogosphere that I started finding out about OSR stuff. And I think the first books that I bought were Bornheim and maybe Yun Suen, maybe one or two other ones. But once I read those books, it just blew my mind in terms of how good the quality of D&D related stuff could be, to the point where I could see myself really enjoying D&D stuff again. And then once I started buying more and more OSR stuff, it's just like, this is it for me. This is the sort of stuff that I want to read and play. And so my collection just started growing from there. And then I just started reviewing them because I just had them lying around.
Yeah, those are two books that I think some people would say were pretty influential in the OSR, especially Vornheim, because there hasn't really been a City Kit book before or after that, I don't really feel like.
Except for Augmented Reality.
Augmented Reality? I don't even think I've seen it.
Yeah, that's a really interesting one. It's not for a fantasy game. It's for cyberpunk cities. So it's basically the same premise as Vornheim, but it is much bigger. It's just packed with, like, I don't know, 50 to 100 D100 tables that generate all the stuff you would need in a cyberpunk sci-fi city. It's really, really cool.
I think I actually maybe just, I don't know if you posted or someone else did. Who did that? Do you know?
Let me see here. I got my copy here. Paul Gallagher. And the book, I think, is the PDF version is either cheap or free. But you can buy the print version for really cheap as well. It's great. If I was ever going to run a cyberpunk city, like, you could run the whole thing off of just this book alone.
So did you get that off of OBS or Lulu or what?
I think it was Lulu.
Okay. A very cool place to get stuff. So that's awesome, man.
Yeah.
I guess Yun Suen, I would say most of the people who like the DIY OSR niche, because of how far it can travel and can show you how far you can push the boundaries of a D&D type of game. It was pretty influential in that, I would say, as well. And obviously you're a big fan of random tables, right?
Oh yeah.
Do you think that random tables is a necessary thing to be in the OSR, or is it OSR specific?
Well, I mean, it doesn't have to be. It just meshes so well with the OSR because OSR games tend to emphasize, you know, open sandboxes. And in a situation like that, having random tables to generate is just really, really useful. And it also keeps stuff surprising for the GM, which I think is another kind of an OSR thing, where you're exploring an open world, but the GM hasn't planned stuff out. And as a GM, I like being surprised by the things that turn up in my campaigns without expecting them. So. Yeah. Oh, like, random tables just are great for that.
I would totally agree. I feel like definitely a segment of the OSR believes that let's discover a story together. And if the GM already knows what the story is, he's not really having that opportunity. And if you emergent play, I constantly talk about on the show, and random tables are so helpful. And in many ways, I don't even know what you would do to create emergent play without them, I guess.
Yeah, I agree.
So when you do yours, do you do a lot of rolls ahead of time, or do you, well, I mean, if you're playing with fifth graders, I guess you don't have a lot of time or a big attention span. So how do you go through that process?
It's often shorter. Like, my sessions are usually around an hour or so, because, like, an after school club, so I can't go on forever. So dungeons are usually what I stick to, you know, short dungeons that are, you know, 5 to 10 rooms or so. And I usually write those up ahead of time, but I often use random tables to help me generate stuff, just to make them varied enough that I'm entertained.
Okay, so I thought I saw in Maze, or even you mentioned that you can use Maze Rats to create wilderness and such like that. So when you're doing your dungeons, do you put them in a sandbox, or what's your process?
For a while, I was just skipping from dungeon to dungeon. But over the last quarter, I've actually been doing an open sandbox. I've been using one of those... The Wastes of the Jar, which is a big hex crawl that was crowdsourced on Google+, where hundreds of people got together and they each wrote a short description for hexes. And there's like a good 500 hexes or something in this huge open desert map. And I just printed it out with all the descriptions. It's all free. And I've just been running them through it, and they walk around and I tell them what's there. And occasionally I roll for random stuff.
They're probably not too interested in continuity, right? It's just kind of, because you always have different kids or...
Yeah, it's not always the same group each time. So I just sort of gloss over that. I don't really care if they were there the last time or not. They're just all part of the same group. And it's more about the encounters that they hit that day. And sometimes things from the past catch up with them, but it's not as much focused on that.
That's kind of interesting because it sounds a lot like a lot of drop in, drop out or Flail Snails games, right?
Yeah.
It almost sounds identical to that.
For a while, I was thinking, like, how am I going to run this game with all these kids that are coming and going? And then that whole Flail Snails style was like, yeah, it doesn't really matter. So
yeah,
stop worrying.
Almost identical to what like Ben Lawrence was talking about on the show. Just talk about the fun stuff and not worry about the stuff that maybe hinders that fun, right? So that's pretty awesome. Yeah. So you mentioned Hot Springs Island. That's the product that I thought we could talk about. So Jacob Hurst, the author, actually sent PDFs to me and my buddies for this particular product to talk about it because I have the Hex Talk show that is going to spawn off to its own show. And we're still working on it. Everyone who asked me that continually, yes, it's still in existence, but one of the guys, Hoffman, got a different job and he was very, very busy and la da da. Anyhow, we've actually started working on it again, which is interesting that I can talk to you now because the dark of Hot Springs Island or the field guide was something about that. So what do you think first? Field guide first? Because that's what you did on your thing, on your vlog review.
Sure.
What do you think about this, man? Do you want to, I guess maybe we should start for the people who don't know what it is. So a field guide to Hot Springs Island is really kind of like a player's guide that, you know, WotC for fifth edition puts out where you can read it and talk about classes and such, but there aren't any classes in that. It's really just a book to give to the players, like a real product that it's a journal of someone who explored this island before. And then all the stuff in it you can use for them to have purpose in the game. Is that what you'd say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like there's monsters and locations that it briefly talks about and some of the factions and it's an interesting read for sure, right?
Oh, yeah. I think that's one of the points of it. I remember I was listening to an interview with Jacob on Tabletop Terrors, and he was saying how he remembers growing up getting these big monster manuals or these setting guides and as a GM getting to immerse yourself in the art and the lore and so on. But then the players were always barred from looking in that for fear of spoilers. So it's a great compromise where you can give players that sort of thing with all this richness of lore and background without necessarily spoiling anything. And in fact, they can use it to their advantage. So that's just a really cool thing to give to the players, right? Because they don't feel excluded in that way.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic because, I mean, I run my own sandbox hex crawl. And part of the problem is you kind of want to narrow it down a little bit, right? Because I mean, I'm not going to write 500 dungeons or something for this large island. I'm going to write a few, but I also don't want to railroad them into any certain thing. So we used to use rumor tables to do that and create that. But a product like this is probably maybe better for, I mean, I'm not sure like a West March's style. You could do something similar, but this is the first time I've ever seen a company do. Company is kind of a big thing. It's maybe an exaggeration for Jim. I don't know. Maybe not. He seems like he wants to do a bunch more. But I really was really impressed with the field guide for sure. I mean, I don't remember how much I paid for it. I got it off of the Goblin Emporium on G+. I had the PDFs, but the production value of it was so good. It was definitely something that I wanted to have. And my wife, who does not game at all, she's like, oh, this is cool. Don't, because a lot of times I turn my own stuff over too, like you were saying with your board games. But yeah. I don't think I ever will just because of the production values of this book. And it's almost like an artifact in itself. You could use it for a lot of different things. So do you have anything else you wanted to add about the field guide?
Yeah, the production quality is so good. Jacob is one of the few, Jacob and his collaborators, there's a few other people who are working with him, are right up there with like Lamentations of Flame Princess and Satyr games in terms of putting out products that are just gorgeous artifacts in themselves. Which is definitely an aspect of RPGs that's like often neglected, even by some of the big publishers. So it's great to see some of these little guys putting out stuff that is so top notch.
Yeah, it's kind of a who's who of the G+ OSR community, really, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because you have like Eric Quigley, Juan Oka, Billy Longino, Patrick Stewart for writing. It's just, I mean, it's obviously Jacob, who maybe I hadn't even heard of before this, but certainly almost everyone knows who he is now, right? Just because of this product, I would say.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And it's super cool because it's almost done like a journal. So if you're one of those guys who wanted to write in the book and everything, it's set up really well for that, for a player to do. It even says, right, I didn't notice this before, if found, return to be French. Oh, that's pretty funny.
And I think it even has like check marks. like there's a section in the back where it tracks like the different creatures and like which factions want which parts from which creatures.
Yeah, that's a really cool thing.
Stuff like that is so cool.
That is a great aspect to point out, because almost invariably you get the one player in your game that's like, oh man, this creature is worth money. And then now it's up to the GM just to come up with this idea where this sandbox is created in a way that you know who all the factions are. And so you know what they want. And so when you can do that trading, it's a, that's a pretty cool aspect of it. That's a good idea. I haven't ran this yet. No. In fact, I mean, first of all, Jose, my buddy, had bought the stuff. He was going to run it, but I guess we'll talk about that now. So this whole thing is system agnostic, even in the dark. So there's absolutely no stats at all. But it is a very tight setting, right? It's a very tight setting, a small sandbox on a small island. They do discuss other islands, and apparently they're going to make those at some point, because the whole thing is called, what, the Swordfish Islands. Yeah. And most likely, I guess I don't know how much I have read for the future, but it's very elemental. Like you mentioned on your review, that's one of the outlying aesthetics or themes of the setting. It sounds like they'll probably do some other elements, because there was a lot to do with fire in this one, right? Wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Fire and water.
Yeah, fire and water. So at least I would assume some of the other islands will cover some of those other things. But Jose looked at this book and then he decided it would take him too long to prepare it because it's system agnostic. So I think that I mentioned this on the outline. Is it a boon or a bane, you know, to be system agnostic? Do you have any thoughts on that? It's like some of the other products that you do or whatever. What do you think about that?
Sure. I mean, I would agree with you just from looking at the book itself. The thing is, that problem has now been solved, because now all of the monsters have been statted up for old school games and for fifth edition. A number of people have done this for free, and those are out there. Another problem with the book is that you have to roll up what's at every location every time you go to it, which can be kind of laborious. But people have now created random generators online that do it in one click. So the whole thing is now can be run on your computer, and that just all the problems are gone now. So there's no longer any excuses.
See, I wasn't even aware of that. So,
oh yeah, so good.
If you could put maybe some of those links on the show notes thing on the bottom, like I got a little area there, that would be awesome to share with people. So that's what held me back, because man, some of the times I'm just doing my thing, you know, I'm either writing or just doing my day job or trying to set up something for the podcast, or even more intensive is, it seems like, just marketing everything that I'm doing, trying to create a brand so people know what I'm doing and can see it. It just takes a long time. And so when I'm ready to run a game, it would be nice to be able to read something and go. But this thing is so dense with the factions and trying to figure out how they interact with each other. Mm-hmm. Even if you do have the stats, it's almost like, holy cow. One of my own problems that I've talked about frequently is when I buy a published product, I feel like I owe something to the author, when I know I don't. But there's something about it I still try and think of the scope of what the author is trying to do when I'm dealing it with my other people. One of the reasons that I have so much problems with DCC is because when I run it, the products are there and I just kind of don't have the vested interest I have with the thing that I make myself. So this is so dense that when I was reading it, it's like, gosh, I'm never going to be able to keep all this straight. You've never ran this either then?
I haven't run it yet. I definitely want to at some point though.
You wouldn't run this with fifth graders, I'm assuming.
No, probably not.
But this new group you're getting, maybe you'll play, you'll run and play, right?
So, some of the material is a little too adult for kids, but I definitely want to run it for a group. It's a pretty ideal sandbox in that it's just very dense. It doesn't have a million hexes. It has like 25. Everything is like right there. But you do, as a GM, have to be on top of it. I feel like I'd need to do another full reread through it to figure out how all the factions are fitting together, like you said.
What I'm saying are really excuses. The value that these two books would give you in gaming is a lot of flipping hours, even with the same people. And if you ran it for other groups, you could change all the time, because it's hot. You never know what that reaction roll with a particular faction is going to be and what kind of story is going to emerge from that. So,
yeah.
The Dark has a really cool ideas, because there is a prevailing essence of, I'm saying aesthetic a lot, but that's one of my favorite words, I guess, of the DIY OSR community, of the way things are laid out in order to be best for play, right? I mean, yeah. A lot of people talk about that. You mentioned it in your review, and a lot of the big names of the OSR talk about not laying things out like we did in the 1980s. And this kind of follows a lot of those, just with the way, like, I mean, each individual page is, when it's talking about the hexes, it has a little map that shows you the hex surrounding it. gives you some, even like some tags almost of words to describe it, as well as the basic encounters and random encounter tables right on top of it. And then like the quick almost box text, and then, you know, the hidden stuff inside. And he totally does describe how to use this. There's three things in every single hex, right? There's the quick, obvious thing. And then the next thing when you search, and then the final thing that you find, which takes a lot of the, when you run a hex crawl, you're kind of defining that through emergent play. Mm-hmm. But this already has it out, which kind of saves you some time, because when you're doing a hex crawl, it takes a while to figure that out as you're running. And I feel like I'm going on and on. Why don't you say something about any of this?
Well, I was going to say the layout is, I think, the primary innovation going on in here. So I think Jacob's the first person to use Courtney Campbell's idea for laying out descriptions, where you have like the, if you move into an area, the main important things you see are all there first. And then after those things, like in tags, are the things that you would see as you get closer and you examine them more carefully. So it's all organized by how obscure or obvious something is, which makes it really, really easy to run. And Courtney Campbell wrote an article about that years ago, mm-hmm. just as a theory, and he actually puts it into play here. So that was great that someone actually tried to do that.
Yeah, it would be nice if more people can do it. And I mean, obviously, Zach is a huge proponent of that, and you've mentioned that in some of your reviews of his other products, right? So,
yeah.
And so is like another reviewer, Brett Lynch, right? 10-foot pole. You ever read any mm-hmm. of those? He's a big proponent of that as well. So if you guys want some, if you're doing your own DIY stuff and you want some props from the guys who actually do reviews, now you know what to do.
Yeah.
All right. So is there anything else you wanted to add about the dark of Hot Springs Island?
Not really. I mean, it's just a fantastic book. It's gorgeously produced. It's like a real landmark in terms of making a large sandbox as easy to run as possible once you implement those digital tools I was talking about.
Right. And a third party group who is honestly a bunch of nobodies did a very, very beautiful book that, like you said, is a landmark in the history of the DIY OSR community and gaming in general, really. I mean,
anyone can do this.
Right.
You don't have to be this huge company. Like, anyone can put this out if you put your mind to it.
Right. And this was a Kickstarter, right?
I think it was. Yeah.
Well, he had some stuff that he was giving out at North Texas a few years ago when I was there. And Jen Brinkman was the one who was pimping it all over the place. So anyway, cool thing. And thanks for doing that review with me. So I had this thing on the state of the OSR that I wanted to talk about. But man, we talked way more about the thing than I intended. But that's awesome. It deserves it. All right. So in the last week or so, there has been a lot of activity on the Twitters about these wars that are going down, a particular individual who some would say is a leader of the OSR. And I think these things are both connected in a way, both of these topics that I wanted to talk about. One person basically said that if all you're doing is watching Critical Role, you're not really a gamer, right? is that what you say it is, or no?
I think so. I don't know if I actually read that comment, but I heard people talking about that.
Yeah, that was the original comment that got everyone in an uproar. Well, this particular person, that's his thing. He likes to be kind of a shock jock, where he will say something outrageous and then be offended by people being offended by it. So in general, do you agree with that? It was interesting that Jeremy Crawford kind of talked about it and what he said. Do you have any thoughts on it?
I don't think anyone gets to say who's part of what community. So no one's the arbiter of that.
And no one should. People complain about gatekeepers all the time, but they're only gatekeepers if we let them be, right?
Right. No one's stopping you from doing whatever you want as regards D&D or whatever. Yeah.
It doesn't matter how someone defines you, because you define yourself. I mean, I'm a firm believer in that, and no one has that power over you. And I don't care how many people read his blog or are on his site or bought his books or anything. Anyone, not me, not you, not anyone, you know? So.
Yeah, the essence of the whole DIY D&D is just like, don't wait for permission.
I totally agree with that.
There aren't leaders who can tell you what you can and can't do. So,
all right. So the other one was a tweet that a person said, and I'm not going to say his name because I don't really want – it's not like I have a mob that follows me around or followers to go after this person. But even if I did or didn't, it doesn't matter. I don't want that to happen. I just wanted to talk in general. That this person – this is what he honestly believes, because I talked to him at length and I tried to talk to him in a very – non-passive aggressive way and very just, you know, logically, I guess. This is what he said. The OSR community is so toxic, I pretty much have to do a small background check anytime a name comes up in a story or a project. Man, what do you think about that?
I think that it's sad that there are people who are obnoxious enough and loud enough that it makes the OSR sound that way from certain people who are outside of it. I mean, it comes down to the fact that there's a certain sense in which the OSR is a community, but it isn't really. There isn't one local place where it all gathers. It doesn't have any leaders. It's just a wide network of people all doing their own thing and occasionally collaborating with one another. And there are some people who are really loud and therefore sound like they're more important than they are.
The percentage of people in the OSR versus these so-called leaders who aren't leaders to anybody actually in the community, I mean, doesn't it seem, is it the squeaky wheel kind of the opposite thing? It also gets, the squeaky wheel gets the attention, but in this situation, it's kind of bad attention.
Right.
It's sad that that's possible and that people feel so strongly about it that they're not even willing to say, oh, well, maybe you're right. Maybe it is this three or four very loud voices that have created this toxicity.
Yeah.
The person also went on to say, you know, until you are controlling your community and removing all rape content from every OSR product, you know, your community is going to continue to be toxic. I mean, how much rape culture do you see in the books that you're reviewing?
I mean, it depends on which publishers you're looking at. But the thing is, like, there isn't a community. You couldn't go through and throw out people from the community because it doesn't exist. It's just a huge number of people who sort of agree on certain things that they like about games, but half of the time they're fighting amongst themselves. Or they just, you know, are just doing their own thing. There's a big perception of the OSR from outside of it about what it's like. And I don't see a lot of engagement with people from outside to people with inside the OSR about what the people there are actually like. One thing I've heard from a lot of people on G+ is a lot of people from smaller marginalized communities, like people who are gay or trans or people of color and so on, get really offended when on Twitter, people will say, oh, the OSR is a bunch of old white dudes, and just nullifying all of this incredibly vibrant culture within the OSR that's producing a lot of stuff. Those people are just annihilated by that kind of conversation. And I think it's just totally inappropriate. Like, figure out who's actually making stuff and then talk about it. But if you think that it's just a bunch of old white guys, then, you know, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And that, like you say, it's not even a community. These are somehow this blanket category has been created, which honestly, I don't even think is relevant anymore, to be honest. I mean,
yeah,
retro clones aren't going to come out anymore. They've released all the old rules on PDF and you can print them anywhere you want. So we don't really need to remake these rules anymore, which was the purpose of the thing. So that's why people call it DIY more often, I think. So,
well, that and combined with the narrative that I see just constantly, especially on places like Reddit. It's changing now a little bit, but there's this really strong ongoing narrative where people only play OSR games because of nostalgia.
That's ridiculous. Yeah.
You hear that constantly. But again, that's a viewpoint from someone who has never talked to anyone within the OSR because almost everyone that I know who plays is around my age, right? We didn't play in the 80s or 90s because in many cases we didn't exist at the time. So it's like, we have no nostalgia. Maybe we actually like the rules. So if you talk to people in the OSR, you would find that out.
Yeah, but it's like they don't because they're turned away by the loud voices that have actually been given a voice by maybe saying they were consultants on 5e. I don't know. Maybe that's why. I don't really know, but maybe it's a possibility.
Opening more communication channels is the big.
Yeah, that's what we should be doing, right? That's what we are doing, I guess. But
that's part of the goal of Questing Beast, yeah.
All right. I mean, the name of my show has OSR in it, so I'm assuming that they're going to be like, oh, no way. But I'm also called one of the nicest people in podcasting, so I mean, that's something.
Hey, I got that going for
I should yeah. put that on the name, but it just sounds longer, I guess. All right. So we're getting running out of time, as always. I felt like we had so much time. I was like, man, we're not going to have enough to talk about, Ben, but I guess we did okay. All right. So I want to make a shout out to these guys are three new patrons just in the last month. And most of these guys are friends of mine in one way or another, but it's still nice of them to want to support my show. So Riga, I have no idea who you are. That's a sweet name, though. Thank you, Timothy Deshane, the guy who ran Astonishing Swordsman and Sorcerers for me at GaryCon. Thanks, Tim. And Caleb Congrove, Ungainly Swordsman from Twitter. That's who I met there, and he actually played in one of my my BX games. So thanks for supporting the show, man. If you want to become a patron of Hobbs and Friends of the OSR, www.patreon.com/OSRNHobbs. You got a patron too. Do you want to pimp that a little bit?
Sure. This is patreon.com/questingbeast. And I'm on YouTube at youtube.com/questingbeast.
And we will put those in the show notes as well. So, like I say, thanks, patrons. So if someone wanted to talk to you about, you know, being a beast of questing, how would they get a hold of you, Ben?
You can talk to me through YouTube. I'm on Twitter. I can put that in the show notes as well, at Benjamilt. And it's usually the best way to get in contact with me. If you go to the Questing Beast YouTube channel and go to the About tab, you can get my business email address and talk to me through that. So those are all good ways.
On Twitter, I am at Hobbs Indeed, and the show has its own Twitter feed, at OSR and Hobbs. I'm thinking about trying to push more people, because you see that all the time on Twitter. Hey, I need more followers. I don't really know what that means, but I'm thinking about doing that. So if anybody has any ideas, that would be great. To me, the best place to talk about OSR games, as it is relative to my show, because I'm obviously not the end all of the OSR. I'm not the voice of the OSR. I'm not a leader of the OSR. I'm not any of those things. I'm just a guy that likes to talk about it and share my own passion for it. You can go to G Plus Community, Hobbs and Friends of the OSR, and we now have 555 members, which is crazy, because I don't even know. People say that the OSR is in the 2,000 range of people anyway. So to think a quarter of Omara on G Plus talking to me in that community is crazy. Are you on my community or no?
I think I might be. I know I've seen it. Yeah.
You fucking better get on there, Ben. <I'm just kidding. laughs> All right. So thanks again for having all your patience, Ben. And I really appreciate you being on. And like I say, we're going to have to talk some more and figure out what we're going to do. In the meantime, though, I want all of my listeners to go check out his vlog, because he does a lot of awesome reviews, which is something I think the OSR desperately needs, really. The more voices we have telling people what they should be buying, the better off we're going to be, and the better off the niche, our industry niche, will be, because they'll make better products because they'll know how to by listening to these people review them, right?
Correct. Right. YouTube is the future of D&D, so get on YouTube and watch those videos.
Or Twitch, right? I don't know if it's YouTube or Twitch yeah. But yeah. All right, so you got any last words for us, Ben?
Play more D&D and buy more OSR stuff.
Thanks, man. So thank you so much for visiting Mr. Hobbs's Gamerhood. Won't you be my gamer? Hobbs and Friends of the OSR is part of the Misdirected Mark Network, the media arm of Encoded Design.